You're listening to Trust Me, You're Broke. I'm your host, Julia, a millennial consultant in banking, here to give you some tips and tricks on how to make, save, and grow your money. Let's get started. All right. Welcome to another episode of Trust Me, You're Broke. Today, I have a very special guest, which is a new segment that I'm trying out. But in today's episode, we want to kind of discuss toxic workplaces and knowing when to leave. I think the previous episode on, you know, work and career in general was received really well. So we wanted to kind of continue on that topic, but specifically just knowing when to look for another opportunity, another one that's better for you mentally and physically. And so today I have a very special guest, and she is my best friend and roommate, and she is currently working as a marketing retention specialist. Laura, say hello.
Hello, everyone.
Just so you guys know, Laura also has a fashion account. So if you're interested, you should go follow Laura the Style Explorer on Instagram. Laura, do you have a short ad for this?
Yes, it's Laura, L-O-R-A, not L-A-U-R-A. And yeah, follow me if you want to see me find the best fashion out in the Toronto city and just figure out my crazy style journey.
Yay! Okay, so this is like super exciting because I think we've been planning this for weeks now.
We have.
And yeah, and we were just talking about how it feels like we're talking to like a random person.
Yeah, I feel like I'm talking to like a person who's recording in California right now and just far away. We're in separate rooms right now, even though we live together.
Yeah, we're in separate rooms right now because like I don't have two mics. So we're just trying to sort out a system where it works best for the both of us. But okay, so Laura, you used to work at an agency.
Mm-hmm.
So why don't you start off by telling all of us about that experience and how you kind of pivoted to the job you have today?
Yeah, so I was living in Vancouver and I was ready to graduate, and I really wanted to work at a creative agency. I was really interested, you know, being a like person who's interested in fashion and mm-hmm. creative outlets. I was really, you know, wanting to explore that side of the marketing industry. And so, you know, me and Julia were talking and she really encouraged me to move out to Toronto. And so that was really exciting. And I, you know, immediately started looking for jobs in the city, and I came across an account coordinator role at what became my previous job at this mm-hmm. agency. You know, you need a job when you're making such a big step like that, and you know, you mm-hmm. want to work out. And so I interviewed for this agency, and it was quite a strenuous interview process. Actually, I went through like 4 to 5 rounds of talking with different members of the team. I would say that was already a red flag, but I just kept going because I wanted it to work out, and I landed the job, moved out to Toronto, and it was very exciting. But when I started the job, I was thrown into this kind of world of super fast-paced agency life, a lot of high-pressure situations in what I was doing, and just a lot less time for people around me to invest in my development and growth as, you know, a businesswoman right out of school. So it was a lot of different factors that kind of led up to why I wanted to leave. In the first place.
This totally brings me back to when you were interviewing, and it was just, I remember being, like you said, like super high pressure. And I think it's a very common thing with new grads, especially when you're, you know, starting off your first career and you have all these opportunities, and mm-hmm. it's like equally exciting, but also you're equally, I don't want to use the word desperate, but you're just like, so you want to land that first job and you're so eager for that. It can be like a very, I think, stressful experience, but also it can, I think, during the course of your role, you can start to realize like, maybe this is not my passion, or this is not the culture I'm going for, etc.
Yeah. And to that like point, what you're saying about, you know, you have this dream and this idea of what you want, and you want to like realize that dream so badly, that I think it kind of gets in the way of your well-being, and not just mentally, but, you know, financially, with what your podcast is all about. And, so for me, when I was interviewing and really, you know, just wanting to land this job to take the like, next step, I think I like was definitely more lenient on the salary that they offered me. And I was very like trusting that they would, you know, work with me to increase my salary as time went on. And that just didn't happen.
Yeah, that's a really good point, because I think a part of the reason why your story is so interesting as well is I think a lot of people think, you know, when a new job opportunity as a new grad comes, it's usually full time. But for you, it was actually contract. And I'm thinking there's merits to that as well, but also there were kind of some significant challenges. So can you just tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, definitely. So kind of how it worked, and I really wish I knew this starting out like your post-grad career, but surprisingly, a lot of jobs do start out as contract if you're not, I guess, at like a Fortune 500, like big four, well-known company. It's very contractual. So right off the bat, you know, I think I was lucky because I started my base negotiation of my salary at like a higher end point for what, you know, this job would regularly require me to have. So I luckily landed like my minimum, you know, base salary, which was like decent. And then I kind of promised 3 months down the line that, you know, once we see how it goes, we will increase your, you know, we'll talk about increasing your salary. And I was like, oh, okay, great. You know, clearly they see they have a future with me. Things will work out. It's very trusting. Never trust that line though. If I, they will tell you that down the line, they'll talk about it. They're not going to do it. You're going to have to do it. And so, yes, like contract, I think is great because if you're someone looking for a bit more freedom in your work, that definitely helps take off the pressure of, you know, feeling like you're stuck in one job. But I think for me, and I didn't really realize it at the time, but I really wanted some work environment where I feel like I would be invested in and, you know, could see myself growing there long term. And so when I was working in contract, it was always kind of me mentally stressing about what the next contract would look like. Yeah. And it was a very interesting way that they kind of played with my mind and my money, because in a contract, they're saying, oh, okay, well, we'll discuss, you know, salary once we put you on full time, or once your contract is over, then we'll discuss an increase. And so in my mind, I always thought like, okay, if I just keep working till the end of the contract, if I just keep like working really hard, they'll put me on full time. And that they just kept leading me on. And I think, you know, I don't think you need to be a stellar performer in your job to deserve, like, have a right for full time if you're invested and you put in the standard work. And so for me not to receive that, it really messed up like my confidence and my mental state, and my initial desire of asking for a raise went down to simply asking for full time. And so I was kind of put down, like, you know, where I wanted my threshold of like success and like financial well-being to be, brought down one step, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, totally. And I think when I first started with my first job, I thought all jobs were contract. Like I thought, you know, every contract you sign has an end date. And then when you get promoted, you like, you know, renew your contract or whatever. That's how I thought like it worked. So for anyone out there who's like starting their career, just so you know, like full-time means like there's no end date to your contract. That's permanent full time. And then for a contract, it's like usually they have a date, and then at that date, they reassess whether or not you're needed, basically. So I think, yeah. Laura, for you, it was like, was it like a 1 year contract at first and then it increased?
No, or? It was 6 months.
Okay. It was 6 months.
Yeah. Definitely 6 months. Short. And then another 6 months. And then 3 months was kind of how it ended up. And that was the end of my term there. And it's like, there's no, I mean, and I don't know if this is ever agency, but because of the lack of structure at that kind of work environment, there's no HR, there's no one managing your salary, your, you know, work terms. And so I really had to fight for my, you know, if I wanted to continue working there, I had to fight for that. And I had to raise that, which is, it's so like different to me from the previous like internships and experiences I've been in. But I think it was definitely an important lesson. Like, although they should, when you're in a proper work environment, there's going to be times where no one will fight for you to work there except for yourself. And you have to always be your number one cheerleader.
Yeah, and this is where I think like culture comes into play as well, because with your company, I don't know, like we worked from home a lot during this pandemic, and just watching you from the sidelines, it was very like target, go, go, go. And, you know, how you're doing mentally, physically, and then also like where you think it just, there wasn't a sense of you're here to build a career. It was more like you're here to perform and that's it. Like, wow.
Every company right now wants to say that they care because that's just the right thing to do. And it's, you know, everything, public companies, you know, things with social media, like there's a lot of access to information about what a company's really like. So I think companies want to keep up appearances. And maybe that sounds a bit bitter, but I think when you're on the inside, when it's a bad work environment, you kind of are just a cog in the machine. And you really just have to look out for yourself.
Yeah, for sure. And I think just before we move on, I think a great learning moment here for anyone starting a new job really or transitioning is like always ask for higher in terms of your salary, in terms of your base. Mm-hmm. I don't think it hurts to ask for more and then be told no. And, you know, this might be a controversial statement, but I feel like women, especially where they feel apologetic asking. And I think the one good thing that came out of this is, and I don't know how much of it is true, but I think, Laura, like you knew your kind of market value based on all of the great internship experiences that you had. So going into it, you're like, this is how much I expect. And therefore, you're going to give it to me. And they actually gave it to you, which was awesome.
Yeah. And that was, I mean, that was like the base of what I asked for. And like, if I had just said, oh, this is what the market, you know, value is for an account coordinator, I'll just go with that, like, I would have ended up with so much less. So you really have to remind yourself of your value and your experience and really like let that come off in your interview, because no one can tell you different. And just like a funny story, like when I wanted to talk, like after, you know, my 3 month probation, they said, like, oh, you were such a good negotiator, oh, that started you off so high that we're not going to increase it this time. And I was like, not what you said in the initial conversations. So they'll try to twist it.
Yeah, like, you know, in my own experience as well, like getting promoted this past year, I was told like, oh, your raise is not going to be as high, because if we cap it at the high, at like the highest level, then the next year when we like do a performance review, like we can't increase your salary because you're capped at that level. And so, you know, originally I was like, this is pretty bullshit, but I feel like there's some truth to that. So that's also another consideration, I guess. It's like starting off high doesn't necessarily mean you'll keep, you know, at that high level. They will try to like level you down to a certain level. I mean, that's what happened to me at least. So yeah,
I think
that's a good point.
The difference, like from like what I'm hearing from your experience and mine, is I think your conversation just sounded a lot more transparent. Versus like, I feel like my conversations were, I think, a bit more manipulative in what they perceived my experience like to be with our conversations versus what it actually was. And I think there was a bit of like, okay, what are you not telling me? Like, are you just keeping me on because it's convenient and you don't need the future, or can you actually not afford to, like, you know, give me a raise? There, I think there was just not a lot of honesty. And I think that's really important when you're looking for a company to get that transparency.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. And I think you made a good amount of effort to try and reach out and have that conversation with your supervisor and your immediate manager, and they were just too busy.
Yeah. It was a lot about like the lack of resources, and everyone goes to the grindstone, and no one really had like the capacity even to kind of invest in you. And I think that's another thing to look out in a role is, do people even have time to give you time?
Yeah, no, for sure. And I feel like a lot of people try to reason and say, you know, this is agency life, like this is the norm within this industry. But I don't necessarily think that's true, according to your experience and some of your other coworkers or in other agencies.
Yeah, the level of tenure a company has as well. I think mine is my ex company is, it's around 10 years. So it's a little newer, I'd say, whereas some larger like national agencies have been around for a while. They have multiple offices. Yeah. And I think just like it's a lot more structure and a lot more experience dealing with a larger employee group, because I think where I was, like, our company was rapidly growing, especially during COVID, and no one really had the capability to understand how to deal with that and understand, like, you do need like HR and cultural norms like put into place
and all capacity planning, right? Like, someone to plan out these resources.
Yeah, like it was either like there was no one, like, and we needed a ton of people to do the work, or there was like enough people and we were getting too much work from clients and we actually had to like slow it down, from what I heard. And so it was never like a proper balance.
This brings me back to like the summer. We
went dark
so much
times.
Remember you were saying, you know, on Sundays, just thinking about waking up for work just gave you extreme anxiety.
Yeah. Like the Sunday scaries was taken to a whole another level. And I like did not enjoy my evening just worrying about like all the shit I had to deal with. And I wasn't even getting like valued for it. And I think that's the hardest part. I think you can take on a lot, but if you are not valued, it's like, why am I even doing this?
For sure. Like, you have to be appreciated as a person. And I think that's the moral of the story here is, like, if you settle for something that is unhealthy for you, it also impacts like your personal finances as well, like taking on more pay. And then, you know, I think this is a good segue to the next part, which is any like financial benefits that the company also offers. So like on contract, for example, what was like the benefits that you had at work that you could kind of use, or did you have any?
Well, yeah, very limited. I had no vacation days. Like my vacation pay went into my salary, which like is fine. It's not that much, but it's like when you want to take a vacation, it's going to come out of your salary anyway. So like, what's the point? The second thing, like I didn't have any healthcare. I didn't have dental. We had this thing called a wellness credit, which was luckily a sizable enough amount. Mm-hmm. And so I could use that on a few mental health tasks I wanted to have. But honestly, my benefits just came from like luck, like lucky that they offered this to us. And like, it's not that there was anything standard for me in my contract that I could benefit from. Mm-hmm.
And that's like a really important point that you just mentioned. It's like, no matter whether or not you're, you know, permanent full-time or your permanent contract, whatever you are at, I think it's really important to look at what, you know, people call quote unquote the full package, because vacation pay, dental, medical, like health care, all of these things, they add up. They add up to a significant amount, I would say.
Yeah.
So, you know, as a new grad, especially, it could be very easy to ignore that and say, okay, well, this is a golden opportunity for me, and so I'm going to accept whatever they offer. But really have a good look at your contract and see, you know, are they giving me enough vacation days? And for you, in your case, like, technically, they didn't give you any vacation days, right? I mean, yeah. They said some things like, oh, it's included in your pay, but really, like,
yeah,
that's just paid vacation. That's yeah, not free vacation.
Exactly. It made me not want to take vacation because I wanted to keep making money.
Yeah.
Which in turn, like, burnt me out, which in turn, like, reduced my confidence and my self-worth. But yeah. It's like vacation and those benefits are so important because you need them to perform just as well at work.
When you first start out, especially, you don't really know how to, even if you have benefits, you don't really utilize them, right?
Yeah.
But like, I think the more you work, the more you realize you will burn out. Like, you will burn out if you don't use those massage credits. Like, it's nothing, but it seems like it's nothing, but it's actually pretty significant. And so,
yeah. And it's, you could be like 22 and a new grad, but you're not a superhuman either. Like,
yeah, exactly.
You still need your 8 hours, and you still need to eat. And I, like, so burnout, like, it can really, I think, happen at any age when you're being put through a really strenuous work environment. Like, I would work like 12 to 14 hour days and I would skip breakfast and lunch, and you need that forced time to take care of yourself.
Okay, so that's actually a great point. So you work 14 hour days. I saw you working till midnight, like, too often.
Yeah.
Did you try to, like, set boundaries? And if there are people in your shoes right now, like, is there advice that you would give them on how to draw those lines and just keep yourself sane, I guess?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I think, like, now that I'm out of it, it's really easy to say, like, oh, log off, who cares? And it's so hard to do that. And I think the first thing is, like, really trying to take, where you can, full periods of vacation off, like, at least, like, even 4 days, like the Friday and the Monday. I think, like, full time off really helped have those breaks in between, because you, like, taking, like, midday breaks just isn't enough to, like, separate your mind. I think what really helped me for boundaries is when things weren't too crazy, I'd usually, like, you know, I kind of had to accept this was the situation I was in. I was going to work late, but I tried to isolate it to one day when I could. So for me, like, Thursday was my late work day. And other days I would try to end at like 6 or 7, which I don't know how bad that sounds to people, but for me, that really was like early. And then Thursday would be my late day. So it was kind of like a better way to have a breather, because I could feel like less guilty about signing off, because I'd say, okay, this is going to be the day that I really like go hard. And that's what worked for me. In terms of, you know, being virtually online, I think you can set the boundary of like not responding to emails after like 6 p.m. And I also made sure I switched off I didn't have team notifications on my phone. That was actually the one thing I always kept off, because if I kept it on, it would be a never ending, like, spew of communication. Yeah. So at least I knew, like, that gave me a bit of peace of mind that when I was off, I was actually off and you couldn't touch me. So those are the few things, I think.
And I think with COVID, it was even harder to draw that line, because physically speaking, like, the space wasn't different, right? You were just still in the same location. So I guess signing off would, like, help a lot for anyone. And, you know, not to be confused with, there are certain jobs out there where the expectation is that you work 12, 14 day hours. There are industries like that. However, they pay you accordingly. to work those hours. They give you benefits accordingly to work those hours. And if they're not, then that's not a good work environment. It really isn't. Like, and I think, Laura, like, you already know the story because we live together and we're really close. But,
yeah,
you know, recently I had like a job interview, kind of not an interview, but like a coffee chat with like a potential job offer. And it was with management consulting. And I remember just like, you know, saying, look, this is the X amount of dollars I'm expecting in my base salary, because I know in management consulting, you're expected to work really long hours. And if I didn't want to subject myself to sweatshop hours, I had to like, you know, put my foot down and ask for that amount. And if they're not prepared to offer me that amount, then I'm not going to move. And I think that's with time and with experience, you gain more confidence in the position that you're in and the value that you can bring to a company. And then you just start saying like, why should I deal with you? You know?
Yeah.
So that was it. Yeah. That just reminded me of that story. Cause I think a lot of people focus on the opportunity, but when you really look at the specifications and the offerings of that opportunity, and just try to have an objective lens as to, you know, am I going to have enough work-life balance? And, you know, sometimes young people think, young people as in us, we think like, oh, work-life balance, what's that? Like, you know, it's super busy. Yeah, exactly. Like, who cares? But actually, it's huge. Like, for the sustainability and to really succeed, you need work-life balance, even if that means you're doing nothing after work.
Yeah, which a lot of times we are not, and it's great. Yeah.
Exactly.
I think it like it goes back to yourself, like your self-confidence and your self-worth, because it's like, Julia, you knew like, well, this is the value I bring to this like other company. Are you going to pay me accordingly? No, then like forget it. I don't need that right now. And like for me, I think a lot of my like self-value started being like associated with my performance, which, you know, people thought, or my like supervisor was just not confident in me. Therefore, I equated my like worth to how badly I was doing at my job. And there, and I felt like I needed to work all those hours
to compensate.
To compensate, and to prove it. And I think having that right amount of like self-worth and confidence helps you set those boundaries and say like, I don't need, I'm doing my job well. I'm completing what I need to complete. I don't need to be working till midnight.
And it's like a vicious cycle, right? Because like you have to be confident in yourself to draw the line, but you also need adequate amount of guidance from other people to help you draw that line. And so, you know, it's really like, it's okay to leave. I think it's okay to leave. And it's okay to say, this work culture is not going to work out for me. I've tried multiple times to reach out to my supervisors, telling them like, you've tried to communicate with them multiple times. Like, this is not working out for me. And this is the solution that I'm suggesting. And I don't know if you'd like to expand on this story, but at one point I think you were told like, you're making, it sounds like excuses to me or something like that.
Yeah, it was. It was a weird culture in that it was kind of very like, oh, everything must come from you. And what are you doing about it to change the situation? Where in reality, it's like a lot of situations in life is like, I can't like stretch my hand out if no one's going to take my hand back. Like, it's way straight to make something happen.
Can you tell the audience about that analogy that you had with the Apple bag?
So the perfect way to describe my ex company, I think, was an experience I had at the Apple store, which I got my laptop fixed, and they put it in like a standard cardboard Apple bag with the little like string tassel handle thing. And you know, so I like took the bag and I was holding it with those handles, and I just, you know, stopped at the like a clothing store across the mall and was shopping, and the string like broke out of the bag. So like my computer was fine, but like obviously I needed a new bag to carry my laptop. So I brought it back. And, you know, of course, the Apple Care assistant was very, you know, understanding, like, oh, of course, we'll get you a new bag. But my like experience at my job and their mentality is what they would have said is, well, how are you holding the bag? What did you do to make that bag fall? Like, maybe think about the angle you were holding the bag at. And it's just like, think about that. Would an Apple like care consultant say like, well, that was probably your fault? No, yeah. They wouldn't. They would say, how can I help you? And how can we make this work? And that's what wasn't happening at my job. So yeah, back to what Julie was saying about like, it just sounds like you're making excuses. It was kind of a particular time when I was kind of nearing the end of my contract and we were discussing what to do next. And I was just saying like, I work these crazy hours. I don't get any, you know, positive reinforcement. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I haven't had proper training on a few, you know, jobs I'm handling. And their response was like, it kind of just sounds like you're making excuses. You should know within yourself to positively bring yourself up. And the final thing was, do you really think that's the kind of agency we are, where we train people? And I was just baffled. And I know that was, and I was more baffled because I've seen on other teams, they give other teams like training within my company. So it wasn't even like a company-wide thing that my manager was saying this kind of stuff.
And I feel like now that you're in such a great environment, which we're gonna like move on to, I guess, it seems even more almost comedic, just ridiculous.
Really? Yeah. I was sitting there and I was like, I feel like I'm in a TV show right now.
All right, so now we probably by now scared everyone with, you know, how bad a job could be or things like that. But there is light at the end of the tunnel because, Laura, you moved on to an amazing job, the job that you're in now.
Woo! Woo, woo, yes. Woo, woo.
And so how does that experience contrast to your job now? And what are, like, the benefits like, you know, is it still a contract?
Yeah. Yes. No, it is not a contract. It is full time. And I'd say like really the reason I think it was so successful, like I was so successful in my, you know, kind of turnaround and work environment was because I knew now like really what I wanted, and that was not agency. And so I really focused my search on looking for more like client side corporate role that had full time, that had benefits. And yeah, I was lucky enough to land a role at a like media publishing company where I do retention work. And yeah, it's full time. It is a salary increase from my previous, and I have dental.
Yay.
And, you know, insurance and a pension, which I never like was happier to say those words when I signed my contract. But you know, not having that stuff really puts it into a perspective of how much you do want it.
Yeah.
And I think I'm at a good place where it's a balance of, you know, a bit of creativity, but it's also a client side role, and the pace is just a lot less urgent and demanding.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a great, you know, very validating boss.
Amazing.
Truly, you know, wonderful guy. And it's very interesting to see the difference, even just like specifically my boss relationship. There was immediate like confidence and trust coming in, and that was definitely not received when I started out at my agency role. And I think that really made a difference to, you know, my self confidence and my, you know, value in my work.
Mm-hmm.
And I really do believe that will bode well for me when I'm, you know, trying for that promotion or that raise, because I know that my like boss believes in me and I believe in myself. And I think that makes all the difference when you're trying to succeed in your financial, you know, career journey. great.
Yeah, for sure. Like with internal promotions and raises, you always need kind of like that cheerleader who's willing to endorse your work, right?
Yeah. I would definitely say like find those people. It's not your boss. And I think like for you, Julia, I know it's not just your boss. I know you have a lot of coworkers who will vouch for you as well. And I think that's like those relationships you build are really important down the line.
Yeah, for sure. And also on top of just like having people who are willing to endorse you, I think the other thing that at least I really realized when I was moving over from my first job, even though my first company was still a like multinational, really big company, the difference in HR, like the difference in having HR is so significant. Like, I mean, they had HR, but it was more lean, less corporate, whereas now my job is very corporate, so
it was same thing with like the lack of HR. I think when you wanted to kind of climb the ladder, it's a lot more dependent on your character and less dependent on how you perform in your work. It's like, do you get along with your, I don't know, your superiors and the executive team? And of course you should get along, but it shouldn't be the only like KPI to your success in your company. And I think a lot of times like it was very political in that sense versus like, well, how are you performing?
Simple as that. For sure. And things like, oh, are you outgoing enough? And then all the introverts are like, you know, in the corner, like crying. Because like for me, for example, like I consider myself like an extroverted introvert. Like people who know me very well, they know I'm actually very introverted. But in the workplace, you know, when you first meet me, you might think I'm extroverted. And it's hard. Like in my first job, for example, it was great and all good energy and young people and all of that. But it was just there was a constant pressure to feel like I had to maintain this like extrovertedness, I guess, extroversion. And that's what kind of was valued at that company. Whereas here, like it doesn't matter what if you're extroverted or introverted, there are policies in place and there are critical ways of, you know, assessing someone's performance. So
Totally the same. The same experience in that sense.
Hey, I'm so happy for you, Laura.
Honestly, thank you, Julia.
Like, guys, you don't understand. Like, I saw Laura right from the sidelines, and I'm telling you, like, just the difference in your mood, I think, and just your ability to do things other than work. It's just been so refreshing to see, like, that you're not nervous going into work, you know?
Thank you. And special, honestly, everyone who's listening, special shout out to Julia, because she was so patient with me. I probably drove her crazy with the amount of times I like burst into her room in tears.
Oh my God.
She was just so supportive. And I really, really, really don't think I could have done it without her. Like truly just the amount of patience. And like, she was my biggest cheerleader to help me get through that process. So
it, Laura. They're I've got you on here so you can compliment me.
You can cut it out. It's fine.
Okay. So we did talk about, you know, your first job and kind of the negative experiences around it and how you set a standard for yourself. And now you're in a great place. So to close this episode off, for anyone out there who's in a transitioning period, do you have any closing advice for them on controlling your career and kind of knowing when to leave?
I think like I honestly, and this is pretty typical, but like just do your research. If you can really understand what the culture is like within a company, because I think that's the biggest part. And you know what you want going in, like really think about what is value to you. Are benefits value to you? Is contract or full-time value to you? Kind of, I guess, build the requirements of what role you're looking for before you even interview. so you know what expectations to set. Because if you go into the interview and you're kind of like, oh, it could go either way, then you'll probably end up in a situation that you like is not like your ideal. So research, and I think like expectations for what you want. And then in terms of knowing when it's probably time to leave is one, your work-life balance. We've established that that's important. So please make like keep that in mind. Two, I think trust and confidence from your, you know, superiors or coworkers. I think that's really important. And if you're not receiving that, it's you probably won't be able to succeed as much as you like. And three, what's a good third one here? I think like structure of company, like is there a HR department? Are there cultural norms? You know, is everyone, does at my job, like they didn't have like, oh, we don't have like specific titles, like, but those are important. Those are important to kind of direct yourself and see like how you want to grow and develop. You need those kind of like guiding points. So structure is the last one. So those are things I'd say to like keep in mind of, and also look out for red flags as well.
Yeah, for sure. And I think the best way to understand kind of, you know, beyond the marketing and beyond the LinkedIn posts of, oh, our company is the best. The best way to understand what a company is really like is to just talk to someone or get to know someone that's actually in the job. I think, you know, there's Glassdoor, which has, you know, sometimes very, very blunt reviews and salary expectations, which is a good starting point. But I think meeting someone not only boosts your chance of getting an interview opportunity in the first place, but also just helps you understand what the role really is.
Because my job description was not like anything like about the job that I actually did. And that was one of the first questions in my, like going into my new interview was like, is everything in the job description, like, does that accurately reflect what I'm going to do? Or is there like another, you know, layer that you don't get to see all the time? And they were like, nope, this is it. And when I went into it, it really was like, it was what they promised.
That's a good question to ask, actually.
And I wouldn't have thought of that because I would have just believed what's on paper, but you can't always know that kind of stuff, right?
So wise, Laura. That was Laura Palumbi. Thank you so much for coming on to my podcast. You're my first ever guest.
Thank you for having me.
Hope that's like, you know, consider that an honor. No,
just kidding. I do.
So yeah, guys, like if you are in a position right now where you're a little bit unhappy or you're wondering, am I getting paid as much as I should be, or, you know, are my benefits appropriate? Start looking, you know, look in the market, compare yourself to other companies, and it doesn't hurt to get into interviews and talk to people. So always, always, always be on the lookout. Don't just be complacent and satisfied.
Yes.
All right. And with that, I'm going to give you a little statistic. Apparently, people who move multiple times within a 5-year time frame with their job are likely to be paid 30% more than someone who stays in the same job for 5 years.
Oh, so, I didn't know that.
And just so you guys know, it's an American statistic, so it's not Canadian, but, you know, just a good guiding principle to have in your mind. And to always keep searching.
Keep fighting for what is right for you.
Exactly. And with that, thank you everyone for listening, and I'll see you next week. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for tuning in. I hope you really enjoyed that podcast episode. If you want to communicate with me and connect with me, please follow @Wealth by Jules. That's Jules, my nickname. I'll see you next week.